I remember you, she says. The hollowness of her eyes reminds me of Mother when I looked up from my bed in the hospital, in those days that I traveled a thin line back and forth between life and death. Days where she never left my side.
Ethan, the woman finally adds.
Yes, I picked Alice up once for school.
That was kind of you.
Her gaze drifts away like she's recalling an important moment.
And I'm Jenna, I say, holding my hand out.
Her focus jerks back, her pupils small, hard beads.
Jenna, she says, like she knows who I am.
She looks at my outstretched hand and slowly reaches out and holds it. She runs her thumb along my knuckles like she's counting each one, and then she doesn't let go. I look at Ethan, afraid to pull away. She sees us exchanging glances and drops my hand. Her back stiffens.
Alice isn't well, she says.
May we see her? A hand reaches around the door and pulls it open wide.
Why not? A man says.
He's clearly as spent as the woman, the circles under his eyes and the lines of his forehead speaking of days of no sleep.
She might not be up to it, the woman protests, blocking the way.
The man's voice is tender, barely a whisper, a short knife in the tension that grips the house.
They're her friends, Victoria. If not now, when?
She steps aside.
This way,
he says. My feet don't move, but Ethan's nudge at my elbow overrides a flurry of thoughts to flee. We follow him through the entryway and down a long hall. I sense the woman's presence close behind, watching our moves. My moves. Before we reach the last room on the left, I stop. I can already smell death. Memories shake me.
Smell.
It was my last connection with this world before I was swept into a dark, empty one.
It is distinct. Sweet and yeasty. The smell of death. Like spoiled bread.
Damp and swollen. Coating walls. Nostrils. Skin. Anything within reach. Trying to tag it all. Even when I could no longer see, I could still smell death crawling over my skin.
She's in there?
I ask.
Yes, her father whispers. It's okay. She'll want to see you.
We take two more steps. Before we can even see her, we can see medical equipment jamming the room. Suction pumps, trays of gauze, minty mouth swabs, cups of crushed ice, and stacks of white towels. Ethan steps back and steadies himself against the wall.
She's too sick to be here. Why isn't she at a hospital?
Her mother answers from behind us.
Alice is assigned to comfort care only. Her liver is shutting down. And her lungs.
Heart. Kidneys. Shall I go on? Pretty much all of her organs are in some stage of failure. And on top of that, her condition has triggered systemic lupus. Her body is basically attacking itself.
What about a transplant?
Ethan asks.
Which organ? She has too many involved.
The numbers add up fast. They said she's beyond saving.
There was damage when she had her last illness,
her father adds.
We knew that. But they thought medications would control the damage. She was doing so well. We thought...
He breaks. I watch him sob, hang on to the wall, wiping his eyes, embarrassed, and then looking down, pinching at the bridge of his nose. His shoulders quake, and soft, moaning breaths escape as he tries to suppress his grief. I've never seen my own father sob, but now the soft breaths of this man cut through me, weaken me, and I fear I may fall to my knees. These are sounds I have heard before, the sounds of a grown man crying when there is nothing left to do. The sounds of my father. I grab Ethan's arm and pull him into the room. Alice turns her head as we enter. Ethan can't suppress his reaction,
Oh, God.
You're no prize either, Ethan.
Her voice is raspy and weak.
Alice, I say. She's small, sunken into sheets and pillows, like she's already half swallowed up by another world. Except for her right arm, her prosthetics are gone, stored away. Her stumps barely peek from her gown. An oxygen tube lies across her upper lip, and a large patch is pressed against her chest.
Come closer, she says. It's hard to talk.
Ethan goes to one side of her bed and I to the other.
We didn't know you were so sick, he says.
She smiles, her lips a weak yellow smear across her face.
That's an understatement. I'm dying. When organs start shutting down, it doesn't take long. I always knew it was a possibility. My parents were in denial.
She makes an effort at a chuckle.
Maybe I was too.
She coughs, her face wincing in pain from the effort. She presses a button on a pad near her fingertips. The patch on her chest clicks.
Sweet elixir, she says and smiles.
Alice, is there anything we can do? I ask.
No, Jenna. It's all been done. This little train was set in motion decades ago by people who thought they were above the system. It will probably take decades more to stop it. Only the FSEB can fix this mess we've made. But it's too late for me. With everything I would need, my numbers would be way over the top. It's the law, remember?
I'm silent. For someone so sick, her voice is amazingly harsh.
Hold my hand, she says.
Ethan reaches out.
No, Jenna. I want Jenna to hold my hand.
Ethan and I look at each other. How can you deny a dying person a simple wish? I reach across her bed and take her prosthetic hand.
Your hand is so soft, much softer than mine.
She touches gently at first, then squeezes hard. She pulls at me.
Closer, she says.
I lean down until my face is close to hers, her sweet, sickly breaths hot against my cheek. She pushes up as far as her left stump will allow, and she whispers into my ear. She lets go and falls back into her pillow, and I step back.
What's the secret? Ethan asks.
It's not a secret,
she answers, and then closes her eyes, her sweet elixir doing its job for another 15 minutes. Ethan swipes at one eye with the heel of his hand and clears his throat.
We should go, he says.
We say goodbye, but Alice has already fallen asleep. Her father walks us to the door. His composure is regained. He has returned to the tired man who greeted us, a circle of calm of his own making.
Thank you for coming, he says. I know it meant a lot to her.
Her mother hurries out to the porch before we leave.
You, Jenna, you live on Lone Ranch Road, don't you?
Yes.
I thought so, she says.
She turns without saying anything else and goes back into the house. Ethan and I leave, retracing the steps that brought us here. We don't speak until we get out to the main highway.
I guess it's moot at this point,
Ethan sighs. What's that?
Alice won't be telling anyone about you now.
I stare out the window. The landscape sweeps past as a gray blur because I'm focused on a distance somewhere between the window and the world around me. An inexact distance that holds nothing but Alice's words. Ethan underestimates her. She already did, I tell him. That's what she whispered to me. That's what she meant. It's not a secret. She told her parents. She told them to report me. A swath of red flushes Ethan's face beneath his eyes, and his hands tighten on the steering wheel.
I won't take you home, he says. You can come to my house, anywhere. I'll take you somewhere where no one will find you. Ethan continues his desperate plans for my escape. But I find myself drifting, wondering where Ethan's anywhere might be, caught up in a world of maybes and what-ifs, and wanting to stay there, because it's a much safer world for me to be in than the one I am. Leaving and staying. I almost could. I could almost leave and never look back. Like Mr. Bender, I could leave everything I was behind, including my name. Leave because of Alice, and all the things she says I am. Leave because of all the things I'm afraid that I will never be again. Leave because maybe I'm not enough. Leave because Alice, Senator Harris, and half the world knows better than father and mother, and maybe Ethan, too. Leave. Because the old Jenna was so absorbed in her own needs that she said yes when she knows she should have said no. And the shame of that night could be hidden in a new place behind a new name. But friends are complicated. There is the staying. Staying because of Kara and Locke, and all that they will never be except trapped. Staying because for them, time is running out, and I am their last chance. Staying for the old Jenna, and all she owes Kara and Locke. And maybe all the new Jenna owes them too. Staying because of 10% and all I hope it might be. Staying because of Mr. Bender's erased life and regrets. Staying for connection. Staying because two of me is enough to make one of me worth nothing at all. And staying because maybe Lily does love the new Jenna as much as the old one after all. Because maybe, given time, people do change. Maybe laws change. Maybe we all change. A plan. I have an advantage. At 4 a.m. in the blackness of my room, I can still see. The hall light has been strategically disabled. I stand behind my door, 2 hours before the appointed time, because I'm a horse and do not tire, and because I can't sleep. Fear is caffeine running through my veinless body, jumping from biochip to biochip, circling around my preserved 10%, my brain. Only a butterfly no larger than the real thing, but the most important piece of acreage in my universe. The difference between staying and leaving. I do not tire, but I catch my breath again and again. Betrayal. Loyalty. Survival. Sacrifice. They battle within me. 5 a.m. 50 minutes to go. Is it too late to change my mind? Would the old Jenna have jeopardized her future for the sake of someone else? I lean close to the wall, the open door sandwiching me, touching my toes. In the dark, they will never see me. I play out the plan for the 100th time, and then I hear a creak on the loose floorboard outside my door, and my remembered heart flies to my throat. Footsteps moving into place. I don't need to look at my clock. My neurochips know to the second how much time has passed. It is time. My breaths come in gulps, and in an instant, I curse and cherish neurochips that remember and mimic too much. 20 minutes until dawn. Now, it's time. I shake my fingers. Betrayal. Loyalty. Survival. Sacrifice. Choose, Jenna. I scream. Loud and long. I cry out. I listen. I hear doors bang, swearing, a yell, footsteps. I scream again. No! Stop! Help! Loud so it vibrates from the walls. 2 pairs of footsteps pound up the stairs, calling, Jenna! 2 pairs of footsteps running down the hall, seconds from my door in an empty bed. Father curses the light that is out. Seconds. Through the door, to the bed. An empty bed. And I slip out. The door slams behind me. Lily jumps from the darkness, and in a swift, practiced movement, inserts and turns the key. The locked door that was supposed to shut me in, just in case, now holds them, just in case.
Hurry, Lily says, handing me another key. You may not have much time. I'll try to explain, calm them down, but you know how they are. Your father may rip this door from its hinges.
The banging and yelling have already started. I touch the door. Try to understand.